You're listening to KHEN LP 106.9 Salida.
Story not long ago, high on a mountain in Idaho, I was living free. Some sort of shotgun to a deputy.
Don't shoot me down.
Killed my good dog, killed my boy, my only son, my pride joy. They shot my wife, dead on the floor, holding my baby in the cabin. And you want to go build a cabin in Idaho, in Idaho. If you live in three boys, I'll sell no shotgun, no deputy.
And that was Professor Carlstrom and singing Ruby Ridge, and on his Bluegrass Conspiracy album. Oops, it didn't stop. And tonight, this is Truth Quest with Melody, and I have my co-host, Professor Eric Carlstrom, with me, and Captain May with Ghost Troop. And he sounds like he's... Are you there, Captain May? Well, are you there, Eric?
Hello, Melody?
Oh, there you go.
That's the thing. We're getting hooked up right now.
Okay. And
Melody, I can't hear either one of you very well. I can
okay.
hear you both, but very quietly. So if it's possible to turn you up, that would be great.
Okay, is that any better?
Can you hear me now? I can hear you, but as if you are far away.
Well, I think that kind of sounds that way with his equipment that he has to use.
Okay.
And while I'm at it, I'll go ahead and say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views of KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And tonight we have Captain Eric May with Ghost Troop, and he has... Eric, do you want to go ahead? I walked off without my script on some of this stuff. But he's a military intelligence officer that's been heading Ghost Troop, and is a journalist for Lone Star Iconoclast and numerous other publications, because it looks like he's been getting far and wide with his articles that he's been writing about drills for false flag, and that could lead to false flag events. Eric?
Yeah, well, it's great to...
You guys.
There's two Erics. I guess I'm.
That's right. Duh.
I think we got it on track now.
Okay, great. Well, it's great to have you have an opportunity to talk to you again, Captain May. We had an interview before last fall, and it was extremely interesting and informative. And it's great.
I remember
I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I remember it well, and I'm looking forward to this.
We've had.
I understand that you have one of my colleagues on. Melinda Pillsbury-Foster will be following me.
Yes, she is. If I can get a hold of her, I haven't been, so I'm hoping that it works out fine.
So.
Yes.
She writes the Iconoclast too, you know.
Right. I was aware of that, so that should be kind of. And has she not also been a member of Ghost Troop or?
No, we've worked with her.
Oh, is that how?
She's not formally a member of Ghost Troop.
I didn't think she was formally, but
we've worked with a lot of people.
Right, right.
So just recently, one of our former members is quite the man about the country now. That's Sergeant First Class Donald Buswell.
Right.
The 911 NCO, as he has been termed by the 9/11 Truth Movement.
Yeah, that was
a Ghost Troop back in 2006, and the Army went after him for being on active duty and being a member of Ghost Troop and questioning the official 9/11 story. So a story about him just came out today.
Yeah, I saw that.
Your readers, or rather your listeners, would like to know me and my work better and learn about Sergeant Buswell, they can simply pull up the Lone Star Iconoclast at lonestaricon.com. And they'll find that Sergeant Buswell is on the front page, a fine article by Stephen Webster, which contains some information about Ghost Troop. And Mr. Webster said he's going to be doing a follow-up article that will contain a lot more. And, of course, every week I have my regular column in there.
Oh, you're in. I didn't realize you were in every week. That's great. Oh, okay.
Occasionally I take a week off, but it's about every week.
Well, you've been real busy with working with William Fox and
Dr. Fetzer,
and then Mr. Donald. Is it Donald Buswell?
Donald Buswell.
Right, right. All four of you have been working together on some articles.
Well, I think we captured lightning in a bottle, and we put out what's probably, I think, the most important 9/11 Truth Movement documents ever issued, and that's the Mayday Alert. For the first time, we had a coherent, informed bulletin to the American people, effective Mayday, May 1st, through May 8th, which perfectly coincided with major national-level terror drills being conducted by the government. And in the article, we point out what I think, Melody, you and Eric certainly know, which is that both the U.S. 9/11 attacks and the U.K. 7/7 attacks were carried out perfectly in keeping with the scenarios of terror exercises that the respective U.S. and U.K. governments were running at the same time. That military exercises are the cover under which these false flags attacks are set up. So we put out a false flag advisory, the Mayday Alert, about a week before this week of terror drill started. And what amazed me was that it was not criticized. You know, the 9/11 Truth Movement is finally starting to get hit. You know, we've got two eyes. And in the 9/11 Truth Movement, we have two eyes. One is for looking backwards at the last 9/11 and figuring out what happened. And that's great. But the other has to be looking forward in anticipation of a possible future 9/11. One without the other is meaningless.
Right.
Nobody's going to believe you when you talk about the next 9/11 unless they understand that the last one was a setup. And knowing that the last one is a setup is just idle historicism. It's idle academicism. Unless you're trying to warn the people that a follow-up attack is likely. And unless you take the lessons learned from 9/11 to anticipate when a follow-up attack is likely. So by the time all is said and done, the May Day alert, offered by Dr. James H. Spencer, the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, Major William Fox, publisher of American First Book, Sergeant First Class Donald Buswell, retired military intelligence, and myself, Captain Eric H. May, former military intelligence. By the time all was said and done, the May Day alert was posted at around 10,000 websites.
Well, Captain May, would you get into a little bit more of your background for our listeners so that they kind of, okay?
I was a soldier beginning in 77. I enlisted into the Army out of high school. I'm a Texan from Houston, Texas. I went to the Army in 77. I was part of the Chemical Corps, meaning nuclear and biological and chemical warfare. I came out in 1980 at the rank of sergeant, stayed in the military in the Reserves and National Guard while I went to college, got my commission as a second lieutenant in military intelligence, took my degree in languages, Latin and Greek, then went into intelligence training. From there, I had a few postings, you know, normal stuff, platoon leader, adjutant, and so forth. Then I was selected to become a Russian linguist. I spent 2 years out at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, becoming Russian fluent. I was the inspector team member for the Nuclear Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty in 1988. I left active duty in 1989 and came back to Houston, Texas, where I started teaching private school. I was teaching a prep school Latin, Russian, and Greek, and concurrently I belonged to the 75th Exercise Division in Houston. That was a reserve command. My rank was captain, and our specialty was running high-level military exercises and simulations. So I got a pretty good background in understanding how drills work. I spent 5 years doing that, during which time my specialty was as an op corps, or opposing forces controller, meaning that it was my job in this training division specifically to think like the bad guy. That was my profession. In 1994, I left my regular job as a teacher and began a full-time job as a ghostwriter in the Houston area. I'd been publishing op-eds at that point for a couple, 3 years with the local dailies, the Houston Chronicle, and at that time the Houston Post. I was picked up to write professionally for the NBC affiliates, NBC KPRC Television, where I was the editorial writer in Houston. I had ghostwriting candidates, everyone from, Conoco, Compaq, Enron, Ken Lay, believe it or not, did a little spot writing for Colin Powell. I said Compaq Computers. Basically, you name it, in the Houston oil patch and technology field, and I probably wrote something in support of the company or for the CEO of the company. And in 1996, I was interviewed by the people of then Governor Bush to be Bush's speechwriter. Interviewed with Karen Hughes, if that name means anything.
Oh, yes.
That was Bush's, I call her his media Medea, but she was part of the whole Austin crowd. So, as you can tell from my background, I was a lifelong, and still am, a member of the Republican Party. I mean, I was a regular Republican. It wasn't until in 2000, in fact, I couldn't have cared less whether Bush got it or Gore got it. I thought it was all corruption and crooks, and it didn't make any difference to me. Since I made my money off CEOs, for the most part, I favored the Republican cause. But, you know, I could play it either way. It was when the war started, after 9/11 occurred, I was a flag-waving patriot. I volunteered to reactivate my commission and return to active service. So I was very much on the bandwagon. After the invasion of Iraq, I had published military analyses with the Houston Chronicle predicting that we'd wind up in a quicksand war and we'd lose. Now, at the time, finding a military man who was willing to voice that opinion was like finding a preacher naked on top of the church. It was just the strangest thing on earth, because everybody was saying, rah, rah, one-month war, three-month occupation, home by summer, if you remember.
Right.
Well, as the war began, I followed it with an analyst interest all the way up to Baghdad. And your listeners will probably remember that the U.S. military took 3 weeks to reach Baghdad, then circled Baghdad. Then on Friday night, April 4th, there were suddenly reports of a battle at Baghdad Airport. By the next morning, that story of a developing battle at Baghdad Airport, it was totally blacked out, and for 3 days we had the manufactured distraction story of Private Jessica Lynch. Then your listeners will remember that the only thing they remember about the seizure of Baghdad is when the cameras turned back on to show us a picture of Saddam Hussein's statue being pulled down. Well, what I had found out and what I confirmed through military sources is that everything from the beginning of the battle at Baghdad Airport, covered up by Private Jessica, and finally ended with the pull down of Saddam's statue, was a bloody 3-day battle that involved exotic weapons, high casualties, obliteration of a good part of Baghdad Airport, massive casualties in Baghdad City, shot up U.S. forces. Basically, it was so real that the media censored it out. It was the discovery of a cover-up of the Battle of Baghdad that brought me on what I call a mission of conscience to oppose the Bush administration on constitutional grounds, because that was obedience to my oath as an officer to defend and protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So I found out, I got confirmation of the Battle of Baghdad and its cover-up within about a month of its occurrence by officials at Fort Stewart, Georgia, the headquarters of the 3rd Infantry Division, which did most of the U.S. bleeding in the Battle of Baghdad. After that, I founded Ghost Troop, a cyber intelligence unit made up of veterans like me, joined by civilian activists, to honor the unrecognized U.S. casualties from the Battle of Baghdad. Remember, the public, in fact, if anyone wants their little test of this, the next time you hear people talk about Baghdad and us taking Baghdad, please notice the Orwellian phrase, the fall of Baghdad. The media in all areas will constantly discuss the fall of Baghdad without ever mentioning just how it was that Saddam's capital fell. That whole part of our history was swept into the memory hole. So in order to keep the memory of the soldiers who fought and died there, soldiers and Marines, I might add, I founded Ghost Troop, and it was joined by like-minded people, and it was our idea to shed light on the truth about the war in Iraq and was getting censored out. It was only a year after starting Ghost Group that a Marine captain, Jeff Cross, who was a 9/11 witness, actually got through to me and told me the way things were on 9/11. So that was 2004. Since then, Ghost Group has been, we immediately went from, as I say, looking backwards at what happened on 9/11 to immediately running public affairs missions to advise the people about the danger of another 9/11. I would say that we pretty much pioneered that role.
It's not like they haven't had a lot, it's not like there hasn't
been people out there.
Okay. I was going to say, it's not like there hasn't been a lot of threats about that by our own leadership.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's part of it. The only way to execute another 9/11 attack is to constantly tell the people that they're going to get hit by Al-Qaeda with another 9/11. You know, the psychological preparation that goes into this kind of an attack is as important as the physical execution. And it's tougher now. You know, probably over half the public now disbelieves the government story. Maybe well over half the public. I heard figures of like 3/4. Probably as many as 1/4 actually believe the government false flagged us. If there were another 9/11, that 1/4 of the populace would be all over this thing. You know, they don't get a free shot like they did last time. Last time, it was hard to find people who strongly doubted the official story. Although you'll remember that Bush was immediately afraid of such people because he went to the UN, I think, about November 11th, 2 months after 9/11. And that's when he made the statement, the speech, we must never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories. That was because even though the internet community had just begun to start analyzing 9/11, the powers that be, for whom Bush is the cheerleader in chief, the powers that be were already disturbed by how much information was getting out around the media gatekeepers. So now the public, as I say, I think the Mayday alert that we just put out was a milestone because for the first time, the 9/11 truth movement seems to accept the necessary consequence of the first 9/11 attack, which is there must be a second 9/11 attack. You can't stop these attacks if you're carrying them out against the people. Because if you do, eventually enough of the people will wake up. And once people wake up, they don't go back to sleep. That eventually you're going to be tried, convicted, and you're going to be hanging from a tree. So the 9/11 truth movement endorsed the Mayday alert. And in fact, much to our surprise and delight, the local media in the affected target area, which was Seattle. Seattle, Washington was targeted for a simulated chemical attack. The Seattle Times ran a major story about the concerns of the 9/11 truth movement, in which they detailed the argument of a U.S. false flag attack to set up a Middle Eastern war, and the fact that there were FEMA operatives present in New York before the 9/11 attack, and the UK attacks were coincident with government exercises. So all that represents a big breakthrough, and it makes it exponentially more difficult for them to carry out the next 9/11 attack than it was for them to carry out the original attack. So long as we continue to talk about the prospect, we are averting the prospect. And you know, a lot of times I'll hear people say, you guys are crying wolf. But given that we know that 9/11 and 7-7s were both inside jobs, false flags carried out under cover of military training exercises. We're not crying wolf if we point out every time there's a major training exercise that there is a possibility that there could be a wolf attack. The existence of wolves and wolf attacks should not be in question anymore. It happened. And it will happen again unless we're vigilant. So if a regular, if somebody off the street just rolled the dice and picked a day and a month that says, I'm warning the public that there will be an attack on this day, then it would be proper to say that that's playing Chicken Little. That's crying wolf. But when military experts with extensive experience and a great wealth of research and publication in the area of 9/11 truth put out a collective warning, then it's time for the public to take it seriously.
And again, I say that's also because, I mean, our leaders keep reminding us of that, too. I mean, we've got a psychological thing taking place here that they're doing to the public. Is that correct?
It's preparation.
Okay.
You constantly, the elite, the establishment, I think that's a good term, the media and political establishment have no choice but to continue down the false flag path. And there's no appearance that they intend to do anything else. For heaven's sake, we are preparing a war against Iran. I mean, everybody sees that. Whether it happens in the next month or the next year, it may or may not. But the idea that we're not working the scenario very hard, is absurd. Bush is preparing war. In the same way, Bush is preparing for the war against the American people. There's no way out of this thing for the perpetrators of 9/11. They must carry out another attack. When Tommy Franks, General Franks, who led the U.S. forces into Iraq, when Tommy Franks put out in a book that he was afraid of another 9/11 type attack, probably with weapons of mass destruction, that would overthrow the U.S. Constitution and make the people turn to a militarized dictatorship for security. He was really laying it between the lines. What he was saying was, I'm pretending like I'm afraid of this, but what we're all working for is another 9/11 attack to knock the country off its constitutional foundation forever. And you can see the groundwork being prepared for that. Bush, a year ago, in fact, just about exactly a year ago, enacted National Security Presidential Directive 51, so-called NSCD 51, which provides for the establishment of dictatorship in the event of another 9/11, or for that matter, of a natural catastrophe. 3 weeks ago, the military and police ran Operation Sudden Impact, in which they did a three-state massive roundup of warrant violators. But the people who were running it mistakenly said to reporters from Alex Jones' outfit, InfoWars, we're preparing for martial law. These are dictatorship drills. And next week in Iowa, apparently FEMA is going to be running a concentration camp drill where they have sequestered and vacated a substantial area in Iowa to run a simulated concentration camp. So, again, right now you'd have to say, if it looks like a wolf and sounds like a wolf, growls like a wolf and smells like a wolf, there's a wolf out there. And the wolf is another false flag terror attack to institute a national dictatorship. Everything is being set up.
Professor, are you there still? Eric?
Yes, I am. But, you know, you guys sound so far away that I'm very fascinated with what Captain May is saying. I'm not sure I can add anything now. I'm taking good notes, though, Melody.
Okay, great.
I guess I could ask Captain May. First of all, thank you. I think the analogy that you make about the eye looking forward and the eye looking backward is excellent. We all thank you for having the qualifications and the intelligence and the fortitude to be that forward-looking eye, and it seems like many, many have joined you, many, many people with impressive backgrounds, and including the media. So it seems like this is an excellent educational opportunity for the country to learn what is coming down, what our administration has been doing. I guess the question I would ask is maybe some more details about this May Day alert and how this might relate to previous drills that you have worked on, such as Noble Resolve and Top Off.
Well, it's very similar. Every time there's a major exercise, a terror exercise is the best way to set up a terror attack. Let's say that you and I tell you, come on, Eric, let's go out. You drive. We're going to pretend like we're robbing a store. So you're out there in the parking lot. I go in. I come running out with a handful of money. And you say, what's up? And I say, well, just robbed a store. Well, you literally just got taken for the ride. The operation has gone live. I didn't tell you I was going to do it, but we were practicing, and I made it happen. That's the whole idea of taking a terror drill live, making it happen. Top Off and Noble Resolve were terror drills set up last year simulating a nuclear attack on Portland, Oregon. And as we investigated in advance of the drills, we got many different stories from many different military and civilian leaders about what was coming up. And the stories were contradictory. People were lying to us. They were being deceptive. As we dug around, we found that William Cohen, former Secretary of Defense, had headed up a study group out of Harvard and Stanford, which actually did detailed fallout prediction maps for a 10-kiloton nuclear bomb to explode in Portland. And that was not associated with the drill. So we were finding multiple indicators that Portland might be the designated target. Remember that on 9/11, U.S. military command was actually running exercises simulating hijackings. In fact, New York City was actually running FEMA exercises out of the famous WTC-7. So these exercises are always a hazard. With Portland last year and with Seattle this year, thank God nothing happened. But we have actually seen the exercises go semi-live in Houston, Texas. In Houston, Texas, you have the home of Big Oil. And we have found that when military and police organizations simulate terror scenarios, have drills, soon afterwards or coincident with it, there are explosions in the Houston area petrochemicals refineries. Those explosions almost always, four times that we have reckoned, result in world record petrochemical price increases. To give an example, at the time that Top Off, meaning top officials, exercise was going on, in mid-October 2007, focusing on a nuke in Portland. The Lone Star Iconoclast staff and I received an insider report from Southeast Texas that the federal government was having sudden rehearsals for a petrochemical terrorist act in Southeast Texas. Specifically, they said Port Arthur, Texas, and Texas City, Texas. The information was so alarming, and it came from such a good inside source, that we immediately issued a red alert at midnight. And my publisher and I were actually making plans for what to do if and when we were arrested, because we thought this might be a done deal. 3 hours after we issued the alert, Dow Chemical's pipeline, Port Arthur, Texas, one of the two alert cities, exploded. That was the first time oil ever went to $90 a gallon, a barrel. That, to us, was no coincidence. That seemed to be a setup. The Lone Star Iconoclast, my newspaper, has called for a congressional investigation on the basis of my 4 years of work in this area, two of it when I was writing for the Iconoclast, in which we have correctly anticipated, let me think, six different petrochemical explosions. Every time we anticipated them in advance, sometimes weeks in advance, sometimes only hours in advance, but every time we anticipated in advance, and we were never wrong by more than 24 hours. Now, that can't be done. Four of the six explosions resulted in world record oil prices. That means that somebody made money. So we see the whole MO that we had on 9/11, where, for instance, people do about 9/11 in advance and put in trade options on American Airlines and United Airlines and made a ton of money. So, to take the Houston target area, again, we have six times anticipated petrochemical explosions. Two of them did British Petroleum, Texas City, one Exxon Mobil, one New Caney just north of town, one Port Arthur, Texas. You can't make it up. And four of the six resulted in world record increases. There were military exercises going on concurrent with them or previous to them in every case. So somebody's practicing. The enemy out of it is that we can almost identify, after doing this for a while, the target areas. And in fact, I published a quite well-received article, False Flag Prospect 2008, in which my opinion, consistent with the consensus of my colleagues, is that the top three areas, the top three most dangerous places in the United States, are Houston area, number one. Specifically, Texas City, Texas, the British Petroleum Refinery. Number two, Chicago area. Specifically, the Sears Tower, which, you know, the FBI is constantly saying is a target. In fact, recently the FBI tried to frame up this story where seven young black men in Florida were supposed to have taken an oath to bin Laden to blow up the Sears Tower. So, number two target, Sears Tower, Chicago. Number three target, Portland, which we now expand up to Seattle, meaning the Northwest U.S. But we established those targets 2 years ago, and they keep coming up. So our job is to try to anticipate. You know, it's a simple, it's really textbook military intelligence. You try to anticipate where the enemy, in this case, unfortunately, the federal government, which has become tyrannical, as Jefferson and the founders thought it would, you have to anticipate where that enemy is drawing up plans and gathering forces to carry out an attack. It's not at all new work. It's standard military intelligence. The only thing novel about it is that you're having to factor in that your national forces are being used to set up attacks.
So what do I want to say here? As far as the attacks go, why do you think that they keep picking the oil?
Well, because when you think about the Bush administration, you're really talking about a cabal. In fact, Colonel Larry Wilkerson, Colin Powell's chief of staff, was the first mainstream person to call it that, the Bush cabal. You're talking about an alliance of Zionist and globalist elements. And big oil is the chief actor in the entire economic picture. So big oil is they own Bush. They're centered in Houston. The Bush family lives in Houston. Daddy Bush does. We went to this war for oil and for Israel. I mean, those are the two objectives. Therefore, every time there's a vested interest on the part of big oil to keep the war going, to keep the territorial acquisition of Middle Eastern oil going. That's been the cause of every Middle Eastern war going back half a century. Going back a century. You know, it's all about oil. So big oil helps to set itself up. That's the long-term plan. In the short term, every time big oil plays along, they make immediate profits. You know, the day one of these things happens, if you knew it was coming, you could invest accordingly and make a boatload of money. So there's money to be made. You know, war and disaster are phenomenal economic opportunities if you can just control when you go to war, who you go to war with, and when you have disasters. So big oil is a big player. You know, the top three industries, Melody and Eric, to have profited under the Bush administration, and it tells you a lot about who supports Bush. Number one, financiers, the money men. Number two, big oil. Number three, the arms industry. I mean, that pretty much says it all.
Right.
And right now, I mean, oil is up, what, $120? You know, and the oil companies are still making record profits. And nobody's going to stop them. You know, these economic interests, this cabal, is thoroughly in control. You know, I'm such a Texas redneck and an old school conservative, but this war can be understood very well on many different levels. It can be understood as a globalist war to seize the Middle East. I think a globalist Zionist war to seize Middle East resources and carry out Israeli political objectives. It can be understood in Marxian terms as a capitalist war. And I think that's as good a term as any. It could be understood racially as an Anglo-Judeo war to kill Arabs and Persians. I mean, you know, once you start looking at it with that kind of filter, a lot of the other stuff you can pierce through. This war is primarily about killing people and taking stuff. And carrying out terror attacks on your own people is just the best way to get that process going or keep it going. And the people who are going to help the most are the people who stand the most to gain. So, first attack, 9/11. Major economic target, World Trade Center. Economic white elephant, money loser, bought up by a capitalist Zionist, Larry Silverstein, in the middle of the most Zionist city in the world, New York, with Mossad agents present to film it, the five dancing Israelis. Where's the surprise? So, second target, for the follow-up attack, Houston area. Why? Big oil. Who's there? George Bush Sr. What kind of targets? Oh, British Petroleum, Exxon Mobil, Dow Chemical. I mean, where's the surprise? These are all dilapidated refineries. They'd all love to get blown up, be declared federal disaster areas.
They get around
from a pain in the ass EPA regulation and get paid off by the taxpayers. You know, what's the problem? You can see, if you look at it, absent the distracting element of humanity or morality, it's really quite clear, isn't it?
Yes, it does seem that we have a mafia in Washington, D.C., although they aren't calling all the shots. It seems like there is an Anglo-American empire, and there's a Zionist Anglo-American empire, but it does act a bit like a mafia. What do you think our chances are, Captain May, of publicizing these facts and getting the American people to wake up and turn on this criminal racketeering organization?
Well, I think they're very good at this point. I think the fact that it has gone so long, you see, you have to be me. Because I was the lucky guy, if you want to call it luck. I was the 911 truth intelligence officer who happened to live in Houston, Texas. So I've been part of this constant effort to preempt the next 9/11 attack down in Houston. I don't just think they've been trying to do it. I know they've been trying to do it. And I know that the reason they haven't done it is because we've preempted them. I don't know, but we may have preempted them in Portland last year and in Seattle just this month. You know, you never know definitely, but, well, except instances in Houston where I've seen the attempt. The fact that they haven't gotten the job done yet means they're behind schedule. And when you're behind schedule, your cabal falls apart. Your gang gets busted. You know, every time we talk about a war conspiracy, which is what all wars are, we're always talking about a gang. So when people say Bush and his bunch are just a bunch of gangsters, well, of course, just like Hitler and his bunch were a bunch of gangsters. It's always that way. You've got to have gangsters to have one of these great imperialist wars. But the longer we put them off, the more screwed up they become. So, as an example, the last month starts out May Day. They scheduled a drill, which is the largest terror drill to be held this year in the United States. But we get the word out so effectively that the newspapers in their target area are essentially broadcasting our alert, you know, by putting it in a straight news story. That's intervention, man. now a week later, and again, that alert was posted 10,000 websites worldwide. A week later, today in the Lone Star Iconoclast, Sergeant Buswell, the 9/11 NCO, has just come out with his interview. He was a military intelligence insider who just left active duty 2 months ago. This guy has tremendous credibility. He just came out with an interview in which he says they should be lined up and shot in the Pentagon where they started it all. So, the 9/11 truth movement, the people who are out there to expose and preempt the last 9/11 and the future 9/11, is winning this war. But I have to put a caveat here. We can't be a monofocal movement convincing people that 9/11 was an inside job. It's half the job we have to do. The other half is warning the people that the same bastards who did the last one have no choice but to do another one. And the way I see it, the remainder of the Bush administration is quite volatile because Bush may go for it. They may try to do it. They may try the next 9/11. You know, as a means of seizing control of the country and starting a world war with Iran. But at the same time, so many people are aware of that prospect. And the hatred of the Bush administration, and indeed the entire government that gives him his way, is so great right now that I halfway think they're scared to do it. So what we're doing is the best thing that can be done, and it is the winning thing. We don't have to fire a shot, man. We just got to keep the word out. If we keep our guard up, we won't have to fight.
Yeah, well, I think it's very, very wonderful what you guys have been doing. And very credible people, with good backgrounds in Army intelligence. I've got the May Day alert in front of me here. I printed it off my computer, and I got the word, and I passed it on, as I suppose many, many others did. And people like yourself were able to actually describe the nature of the drill, which I think is called NLE 208. And what was going to happen on what day, and get the word out to the local press, get the local word out, and so it's quite possible that this has had a very positive effect. So I think it's fantastic. As somebody who's not capable of really doing what you're doing, I'm very impressed, and I have been working hard on the other aspect of looking back. But I think, as you say, the looking forward is equally important, if not even more so.
Well, we've all become a network. We have become an alternative media, you know, collectively, so that the internet collectively, the 9/11 truth movement collectively, is more powerful than Murdoch, more powerful than CNN. It's more powerful than all the rest of it put together at getting a story out. You know, more and more people have plugged into this medium. The biggest problem in this medium, or in this movement, is that there is a large contingent of people dedicated to pulling it down from within. So that you find people who are constantly trying to stir up trouble, you know, with, attacking Dr. Fetzer, or attacking Webster Tarpley, or attacking, you know, you guys will be next. You know, if you get up in this movement and start making an impact, you get attacked. And there's so much attempt to create infighting that it's obvious to me that it's not coincidental. I believe it's a professionally led attempt to derail the 9-1-1 truth movement. And my end of things, I guess you'd say the most highly specialized area, you know, the people who actually understand intelligence operations, we're the most heavily attacked of anyone. And you got to think about it from their side. From their point of view, meaning the people who did this, the people who want this to continue, the people who want perpetual war in the Middle East, the people who want perpetual profits for their sectors of the economy, the people who want to keep killing Muslims. For these people, what they hate the most is professionally led efforts to roll back the false flag terror plan. They have to come out against us. You know, we don't talk about it a whole lot, but as you and Melody know, I've been struck down by a very serious illness in the middle of my mission, a freak illness. Sergeant Buswell, whose story came out in the Lone Star Iconic class today, nearly died of a freak pulmonary embolism 1 week after going public with me to alert the people in Southeast Texas to funny goings-on in the ExxonMobil refineries, which exploded the next month. So, you know, what can I say? This is deadly serious stuff. But the people on the other side are playing for their lives. You know, the Bush people, if the truth came out, there would be, you know, we'd throw them all in Gitmo and invoke our own tribunals. So that's what they fear. But, you know, screw them. They shouldn't have started this by blowing us up on 9/11.
Weren't they kind of practicing on us before that even started, like with Oklahoma City or...
Yeah, in fact, you bring up one little minutiae of the info war. These guys are all freaks. They're cultists. They're part of secret societies. And there's even a little pattern. It's a very simple mnemonic device. I'll give you the city. You give me the state. Ready?
Yes.
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma.
New York City.
New York.
Texas City.
Texas.
You see? Three-step process. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma was a small-scale 9/11 carried out by the feds intended to discredit the militia movement. Because remember, if you're going to have a dictatorship, you damn sure got to get rid of the militia. New York City, New York, was a major terror attack intended to send us down the road to martial law and world war. Although they called it global war, but wasn't it obvious? And now, step three, one of the things we figured out after we'd already started running the missions in the Houston area was that Texas City, Texas was always their number three. It was always supposed to be hit with the next 9/11. It was their next target. And the simple mnemonic device, Texas City, Texas. By the way, who's from Texas? Well, George Bush, of course. Who's the last person you suspect of being guilty? Well, George Bush. His own city. His own state. I mean, it was a really brilliant, diabolical setup. And, you know, the BP angle should surprise no one. When we couped the representative government of Iran in 52 and installed the Shah, that was primarily a BP operation. That operation was run at the behest and with the assistance of BP. You know, these big oil companies are not just companies. They're quasi-governmental forces. So, you asked if there have been several attacks. The answer is yes. The coal, the USS Cole attack, October 12, 2000, 3 weeks before the elections of 2000. Just to remind everybody that there was this evil organization called Al-Qaeda. Now, the official name story is a boatload of arrows came up and blew a side of it, blew a hole in it. But seems more likely to me that the Navy missiled its own ship. So all these things, all these attacks, all this terror, I always assume off the bat that they're always government operations. And they're all coded. You know, that's the really wicked part of it. The day before the September 11th attack, let's play a teacher game again. Melody, if your mom had fallen off the back step and broken her leg, what three numbers would you have called?
911.
Eric, if somebody had been breaking into your house, who would you have called?
Yeah, 911.
You know what I'm saying? So if you're trying to set up a national emergency scenario, what date code would you like to put in the people's head? 911. Brilliant. Diabolical. In fact, they love 11. 3-11 with the Madrid attack. 7-7, the London attack. 7 times 11. 11-9, the Amman Jordan attack. 11-9, by the way, is 9-11. Read in Arabic, and it occurred in the Middle East. 9-11 backwards. And 2 years ago, Mumbai. What date? 7-11. So, when you guys said earlier that these are gangs, that's just what they are. And when we say that they use things like mnemonics, like Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, New York City, New York, Texas City, Texas, or they use number codes, like 9-11, 3-11, 7-11, 7-7, or 11-9, well, heck, that's what gangs do. You turn on the TV, and there's show after show about prison gangs. So we all know that you have Mexican gangs like the Latin Kings, the Norteños, and the Mexican Mafia. And we all know that there are white boy gangs like the Aryan Brotherhood. And we all know there are black gangs like the Crips and the Bloods. And we all know that all these gangs use things like code words, signals, numeric sequences. So why on earth do we not think that there are gangs for the rich white boys?
Well, Captain May, I think we're going to have to come bring it to a close here. So is there anything that you would like to say to kind of end it and alert the public as to, you know, this is something that we need to continue on with as far as...
Well, I ask the public to remain vigilant. I strongly encourage them to read the Lone Star Iconoclast. It's my flagship newspaper. If they want a subscription, I think it's $50 a year. It's a great thing to have on the coffee table. And it's somehow it's always more effective with some people when they see it in print. So I, by doing that, they'll be aware of our ongoing efforts to ensure that the public is simply aware of the dangers that are out there.
And then to check in more with what your work is, what website now?
Well, they can find it either at the Lone Star, the Lone Star Iconoclast, which is at lonestaricon.com.
And your website?
At the bottom of my articles, I give it.
Okay.
But my website address is a little convoluted, so there's no sense giving it over the air. If they read to the bottom of one of my articles online, they'll find my website. If they just plug in Captain May,
they'll get it.
Captain Eric May, to any search engine, they'll find a wealth of links.
Okay, well, I'm going to...
This is the Lone Star Iconoclast. Just read my weekly column, and at the bottom I always give you my website that has much more information.
Well, I want to again thank you, and Professor...
And I certainly thank you as well, Captain May, for joining us again. And I'll suggest to Melody, if you can't get your next guest, why don't we try to get Captain May to stay with us?
Okay, well, I can go ahead, and I'll go ahead and play a song here and see what happens. How's that? And see if, and if not... Then
I don't know if he's able or willing, but I certainly have more questions for him.
Okay, well, let's... it's KHEN 106.9... KHEN LP 106.9 Salida. And this is Truth Quest with Melody, and we've got Eric Carlstrom and Captain May, and next should be Melinda Pillsbury Foster. And here's... Go ahead and play a song here.